Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh.
Well, welcome back to Mind Food Radio. And we have done stories on Geraldine Cox before within the magazine, and I'm really happy to have her on today's show. Geraldine Cox is an extraordinary woman. She has run and created orphanages around Cambodia. Welcome to the show, Geraldine.
Thank you. It's lovely to be on the show again.
Now tell me, you're about to open another orphanage in Cambodia, and I will get to that, but I want to just take you back a little bit further. And how did you actually get into this sort of world that you now inhabit?
Well, it all started in my early 20s when I found out I couldn't have children, and the man I was going to marry dumped me, and I was devastated. And I decided that if I couldn't be a wife and a mother, I would join the Department of Foreign Affairs and have a life of glamour and travel. And I envisaged myself going to places like Paris or Rome or London. But my first posting was Cambodia at the beginning of the war, and it was anything but glamorous. Mm. It was scary. It's the first time I'd ever lived in a war zone. I can't recommend it to anybody. And there was something about the country that just grabbed me by my heartstrings. It was tragic and sad and beautiful and dangerous, and the Cambodian people themselves were just wonderful. I liked the food, the music, the religion. I had a wonderful Cambodian boyfriend. It was a country that just sort of touched all my senses. And I left there in 72 and went on and did jobs in embassies, working for ambassadors in the Philippines, in Thailand, in Iran during the Iran-Iraq war. And my last posting was in Washington, D.C. And it's a fabulous lifestyle. These were the days when even secretaries like myself got first-class travel. And I used to really enjoy that, and I'd sometimes arrive at my post being a bit under the weather because of all the French champagne I had on the flight. But although the life was wonderful, the social life was great. You had nice apartments and servants and drivers to work, and the work was riveting. There was nothing bad about it. But I'd go to bed at night, and I'd think, well, is that it? Is that all there is? And I decided in Washington, D.C., that I would resign from public service and go back to Sydney and get a big corporate job and see if I could, you know, get that hole filled up in my heart. And I went back and I started work with Chase Manhattan Bank, working for the country director. And I was bored rigid because after working in foreign affairs and, you know, seeing all kinds of dispatches and political reports, and then to have just had numbers run across my desk, I was bored. Mm-hmm. And after 8 years, my boredom affected my performance, and I got the sack 3 weeks before my 50th birthday. And this was shock horror for me because I'd spend every penny I had on myself. I was a very hedonistic, materialistic, self-absorbed woman. I had jewelry, mink coats, first-class travel, catered for dinner parties. And none of this did it for me. And I thought, what is it? And then when I got fired, I decided I'd do a 90-degree turn, so I decided to go back to Cambodia, where the new prime minister had been my landlord in 1970. He was the son of King Sihanouk. And I knew I had good high-level contacts, so I went back to Cambodia, got a job working for him in his small cabinet office, and I did things like his English correspondence, some speeches, his protocol manual, security manual, things like that. And I loved the work. And then 18 minutes into that job, there was a military coup and the royal family was thrown out. And all the staff that were working at the orphanage that I used to go to on the weekend, which was sponsored by the royal family, all the staff disappeared. And there just wasn't anybody else. And the orphanage was just a place I went to on the weekend to sort of massage my maternal instincts. It wasn't the reason I went to Cambodia. Mm. But then when the coup happened, I had the choice of leaving on the Royal Australian Air Force flights because they were taking out all the foreigners from every country. And I had to decide, am I going to go or am I going to stay? And if I had left those children, I would never have had another night's sleep in my life. So I decided to stay. And after the most dangerous of the coup days, which was the first 2 days in July 1997, I couldn't get out to the kids because there were tanks and shooting and soldiers in the street. And about the third or fourth day after the coup, it was safe enough for me to drive out there. And when the kids saw me coming in my car, they went absolutely berserk because they had seen all the foreign flights come in. They knew the Australians had left and they thought I'd left. And they were yelling out, "Come on, look, Big Mum's here. She loves us. She didn't stay. She's still here."
Oh.
And they just dragged me out of my car and they were touching every part of my body and hugging and kissing me. And they just couldn't believe that someone felt they were important enough to stay. And it was like a thunderbolt in my heart. I thought, this is why I can't have children. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And
yeah.
From that day on, I've been fundraising and the children are everything to me now.
Let me ask you this. That process of going from that very, as you called it, hedonistic corporate world, and you had a hole, you felt there was a hole there that needed to be filled. Did you have a faith during that time or do you have a faith now?
Faith, you mean religion?
Well, it can be religion, can be anything. Like,
I'm a very bit of an old New Age girl. I believe in the universe and karma, and the bad stuff you do is you're going to pay for it sooner or later.
Yeah.
I was brought up as a Christian. Then when I was 19, I found out that my mother's family were Jewish. And then I went to Iran and I had to convert to Islam to marry a Shiite Muslim. And now I'm in Cambodia and I'm Buddhist, so I figure I've got it all covered. I've got it all covered when I go up there.
Wherever you go.
It is very important for the kids to know that I understand and believe their culture.
Yeah.
So I go to all the Buddhist ceremonies to them. We have Buddhist lighting of incense and stuff at the quarter moon, half moon, full moon and things like that. So I am involved with the kids and in what they believe in, and it has to be that way.
Yeah. Tell me, the new orphanage that you're bringing, is it called the Sunshine Orphanages? That's the group?
It's part of the Sunrise Children's Village. It's the third one, and we did actually open it on the 1st of December last year on International AIDS Day.
Sure.
And the Prime Minister, Hun Sen, he really loves our project, and he flew in his helicopter from... it's about a four-hour drive away, and he flew out to open the centre for us. And I just couldn't work out why the Prime Minister was always so kind to us, because he gives us free passports when the kids travel, and he sends me gifts every now and then. And I thought, you know, why does this man like me and Sunrise family? So I asked him, but he built me a house as well, and so that I can be on the property with the children. And I asked his advisor, you know, what's the deal here? You know, why is Hun Sen so good to me in Sunrise? And he said that Hun Sen did his homework. He found out that when I went up there in 95, I didn't get a salary, except for the small salary I got with the prince, and that I spent my superannuation money on the children and on the project after the coup. And then he likes that I don't convert the children to Christianity. He likes that I haven't got involved in the very, very corrupt adoption business. Children are sold and stolen all the time, so I didn't want to get involved in that. He loves that I really encourage the kids to perform their traditional cultural music and dance. And we're even so good that in 2009 we performed at the Concert House in Sydney. And he loves that I do that with the kids. He likes that I don't have any overpaid expats on my project. I don't have any expats at all. All my staff are wonderful Cambodian people that run the place like a tight ship. And the final thing he likes us for is that he says to his advisor that he sees the country managers of, you know, Red Cross, World Vision and Save the Children driving around town in their $100,000 Lexus and Land Cruisers, and he said he likes Mum Geraldine because she drives a 13-year-old Toyota RAV. So now I can never buy a new car, even if I wanted to. Yeah.
What are the challenges though for you? You know, being based up there and looking after those kids. What are your day to day challenges?
The day to day challenges are coping myself personally with the very damaged children that come, you know, into my hands that have been raped, that have been abandoned in hospitals, their parents haven't claimed them, kids whose parents have died of HIV, and they don't have HIV, but the whole village rejects them because there's a real stigma about being attached to any kind of HIV family. Disabled kids coming that I can't do anything for. So this does lead you to a couple of gin and tonics at the end of the day. And like some of my kids, when they come in, they've been so abused that I'll bend down and I'll put my hand out to stroke their face or pat them on the head, and they flinch like a dog does, you know, when a dog's been abused. And some of them, you know, just flinch because they think I'm going to hurt them.
Yeah.
So I'm so damn glad that I was born in Australia. And anybody listening to this program should be very thankful that they go to bed at night and they don't even, doesn't even cross their minds that their kids could be sold into prostitution or begging rings or illegal adoption rings or slave labor. And a lot of my kids have been arrested in Thailand because they're in the country illegally because they've been trafficked. And then the International Office of Migration goes to the Thai immigration prison and gets the kids out and then sends them back on the border, and we're contacted and people like us go and pick the kids up. So these are the day-to-day challenges, but my biggest challenge is getting the money. I need $1 million a year to look after 400 children. We've also got community development programs where if a mother brings her kids to us and the only reason she can't keep them is because of poverty, we go back into the village with our caseworkers and we see what, you know, what are the needs? What does this woman need to keep her kids together? Because it doesn't matter how good Sunrise is, and it is the best orphanage in Cambodia, nothing beats living with your mum. So we go back, we might repair the house and put a roof on it, give them a well, send the mother off for vocational training to be a sewer or a cook in the market. And once we've established that she's earning enough to keep her children, well, then that makes us happy. And we give them a sack of rice every month. But these community development programs that we've started, we've got about 30 of them now, all of them are successful, and the mothers are able to send the kids to school, feed them and look after their medical care. So when women bring kids to us, and it's not just poverty, there might be a sexually abusive stepfather. And also when women marry again in Cambodia, the new husband never accepts the children from a previous marriage. So we take those children too because they're vulnerable.
Wow. Geraldine, we will put a thing at the bottom of this interview so you can, you know, people can, you know, get in touch with you and help and all that, because it's important, you know, we close that cycle. And because I know once people have heard this interview, they've read the story in the magazine, they will want to do something very proactive.
Okay. With the new orphanage, it will house 200 kids that have been born with HIV, and you can't get anybody in this world more innocent than a child born with AIDS. And each of those children needs five sponsors donating $40 a month for us to cover all their needs. So I'm just at the end of a very grueling three-month fundraising drive, and I hope that anybody that hears this will want to be a $40 a month sponsor. But if you're filthy rich, I'll accept more.
Well, okay. We'll see what we can do and drum up some support. Geraldine Cox, thank you very much for being on today's show.
And thanks for your interest. Thank you. Bye.
So for more information, go to mindfood.com, and it's a great cause, and she's an extraordinary human being with what she does with those kids.
Mindfood Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh.